Welcome, friends. I'm Izzy B, your guest host for another inspiring episode of the Ultra Buds Unleashed series on the Trail Life podcast. Today's guest is the unstoppable Katra Corbett, an ultra running legend, motivational powerhouse, and a true testament to resilience. Katra's story is one of transformation and triumph. Once battling drug addiction, she found her path to recovery and a new life through running. Since starting her journey in 1996, Katra has achieved incredible feats, including completing over 130 100-mile races, multiple fastest known times, or FKTs, and becoming the oldest female finisher of the grueling Triple Crown of 200s, which includes the Bigfoot 200, Tahoe 200, and Moab 240. She's fast-packed the iconic 212-mile John Muir Trail 13 times, holds FKTs like the 424-mile John Muir Trail double, and was part of the Icebreaker Run Across the U.S. team promoting addiction and mental health awareness. Katra runs every day, not just because she has to, but because she chooses to, a powerful choice that transformed her life. Her journey embodies determination, courage, and the limitless possibilities of second chances. Let's get started and be inspired by the extraordinary Katra Corbett.
Well, help me turn the turning. Help me get it right. I don't wanna hurt nobody. Well, I don't wanna fight. Well, offer me the peace
hey,
of mind.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
So the first question I always ask all my guests, because I know them in some capacity, is tell the story of how we met.
I don't remember because I feel like I've known you for a long time. And so you're going to have to tell us.
I think we met on Instagram through Nathan, like probably during COVID when there was a lot of communication on Instagram.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Being the Nathan team manager working with you. And then as I got into running the 200s, we got closer. And then we finally hung out in person just last year.
Exactly.
It took that long. At Tahoe 200 at the infamous Spooner aid station.
Yeah.
What happens at Spooner stays at Spooner. I think that's how it was. So I'm just going to jump into the first question here for people who may not know you. How did you get into trail running and later ultra running?
How did I get into trail running? So I got clean and sober on June 24th, 1994. And for 2 years, I got really into exercising and I was walking 3 miles with one of my little weenie dogs that I used to have. And one day I decided to run that 3 miles and that's how it started. I just decided I'm going to become a runner. And this is in the days before social media. There was a flyer inside of Barnes and Noble's for a 10K, and I had just started running a week before, and the race was like in 2 weeks, and I was like, I'm going to run this 10K. So my mom walked the 5K, and I ran the 10K, and when I got to my vehicle, and I knew nothing about running, so of course I felt like I was going to throw up. I hated running all my life when I was a kid, so I got to my car, and there was a flyer for the San Francisco Marathon, which was in less than 3 months, and I was like, I'm going to run a marathon. And I knew it was like 20 something miles because my dad was a runner and he had run a marathon when I was young, but he had passed away when I was 17. So he was really into running. So I'm like, I have watched Boston on TV and all of that. So I asked my friend Kevin, I go, how far is it? 25 something. And he goes, 26.2. And I said, okay, I'm going to sign up for this. So that's how I started running. And I actually went back to that Barnes and Noble's because I knew nothing. I had gotten clean and sober, like I said, 2 years before. So I was totally goth club girl. And so at this point, I had to get rid of all my friends. And I was just working on my sobriety. And I went back to school and stuff. So anyways, I went into Barnes and Noble's and I bought a book on how to train for your first marathon. And like I said, I had less than 3 months. And I had to skip up to the chapter that said, Sunday long run, this is what you need to do. You have to run 9 miles for your long run. So I was like, okay, 9 miles. Got into my little car on a Saturday, hit the odometer because we didn't have our Garmin or anything, no fancy watches. So I went out 4.5 miles and there was a gas station. So I was like, okay, that's my turnaround point. you know, I'll turn around at the gas station and come back home. So I'll know that's my 9 miles. So that's how it all started.
And then the distance got longer.
After my first marathon, I finished, and in the middle of it, it was really funny. I was running next to this man, and I'm like, is this your first marathon? And I said, yeah. I go, but I'm thinking about, because at the expo, there was somebody from the Honolulu Marathon. And I said, I think I'm going to do the Honolulu Marathon. And he's looking at me, and we're like mile 14. And he goes, you haven't even finished this one. I said, yeah, but I know I'm going to want to do another one. So it started from there. And so my second year of running, I wanted to do all the marathons in California. And so some of them were trail marathons. And this is the introduction to the trail running. So there was my very first trail marathon was going to be in the Marin Headlands, and it was pouring rain, and my mom was going to go and wait for me while I ran. And it was like two loops of this 13-mile course in the trail. And she's, are you sure it's going to happen? Because it was like literally like downpour. And so we get to the parking lot, and this is, like I said, before social media, there was email, but nobody would have been sitting at their email at home to be able to get like a response that the thing was going to be canceled. So it didn't get canceled until that morning. So we showed up, and the race director went up to everybody's car and said, they're canceling it because there's a small craft advisory and the park is not allowing it to happen. So it goes, I'll send everybody an email when it's going to happen again next month. So that was going to be my first marathon, but it got canceled. So when I got home, I decided, I'm trained for a marathon. I'm going to go run a marathon today, because I already had my 13-mile loop running. And my mom, we get home and my mom's, what are you doing? And I said, I'm going to go run a marathon. And it was pouring rain in the Bay Area where I was at too. And so I did it. And then the following month comes, and it's the first time I'm going to be on a trail. Oh my God. Like, I had no idea what I was in for. So it was lots of climbing, lots of uphill, lots of downhill. It's like when you're new to trail running, it's, whoa, this is like way slower. Mm-hmm. I finished my first 13 miles and my mom's, oh, good, you're done. And I'm like, I'm not done. I have to go again. And so I was running like 3:45 marathons back then. So this thing took me like 5 hours, and I finished, and I was like, that was the hardest thing I ever did, but I liked it. That was how I started trail running.
What a cool area too, when it's not raining. Really beautiful.
Yeah, you just learn to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I do, you know what? I'm happy that in Bishop, when it does rain, when you live in a high desert, it's not that mud that sticks to you. Mm. That sucks. So that's how I got into trail running. And what was your other question about when I got into 50Ks or ultras?
Ultra running, yeah.
Yeah. So that second year, I was doing all the marathons. And so I was doing all these trail races that were marathons, and I started doing back to back on the weekend. Sometimes there would be a Saturday trail marathon and a Sunday road marathon, like in Vegas or somewhere, wherever I was traveling to. So I was already training for an ultra, and I didn't know it. And then I started hearing people when I was at marathons, these smaller marathons that were on trail, talking about ultras. And I was like, what the heck is that? And so I asked somebody, this man I had become friends with who was running all the marathons in California as well, and he had did all 50 states, and he hadn't did an ultra yet, but I go, I want to do one of these ultras. And he goes, oh, we should. So I looked into it, and there was one where I lived in Fremont called the Ohlone 50K. And at the time, it was like the hardest 50K. So I called up the race director, because like I said, we had Ultra Running Magazine, but I hadn't gotten it yet. And I didn't know anything about ultra. So I don't even remember how I found out about the race. Like, somebody must have told me, I must have saw a flyer like at Barnes and Noble's. I don't even know. We didn't have any like Facebook or Instagram. So I'm like, I don't even know, but I must have somehow researched and figured it out. Oh, I know where. Probably Enviro Sports Magazine. Like it's still around, but in the back it lists races. I bet you that's where I found out about it, because I was in. So it had the Ohlone 50K. So I called up the race director, because his phone number was in there. And I said, I want to sign up for your race, because you had to get sent in a check and stuff. So I was getting
mail in a check.
Oh, you know, back in those days. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's how you get signed up for a race. So he started talking to me, and he goes, and at this point I had already been going up Mission Peak, which is a 2,400 foot climb or 2,600 foot climb in the Bay Area near where I live. So I was already going on trails. And he goes, have you been on the Ohlone Wilderness Trail? I said, I go up Mission Peak. And he goes, yeah, that's not the same. And I was like, oh. And he talked me out of it. He like scared me enough to where he's like, why don't you consider running Skyline 50K in Castro Valley in September? And I was like, oh, okay. So he scared me. So I didn't run it that year. And I ended up doing the Skyline 50K. It was like 102 degrees, super hot. I knew nothing about nutrition, mind you. I had been doing those trail races. And oh, that was another thing. When I crossed over and started doing the trail marathons, you don't have water every hour, every mile. You have to carry like a handheld back in those days. Like I had a waste pack with a bottle. And so they even told me that before I did the first race. They're like, make sure you have a bottle with you. And I was like, oh, okay. But they didn't have food out there. They had some cookies and some oranges. And that was it for these.
It wasn't a full buffet like it is now.
No. So, but at the 50K, they had food all over the place, but I wasn't used to using any of that stuff. I didn't know about salt. I didn't know when I hadn't run in that kind of heat, really. And so I remember starting the race, and my friend was running it too, but I was much faster on trails than him. So he was like a fast, older road marathon guy. So I ran. It was uphill right away, and I'm running up all the hills, and we're like 3 or 4 miles in, and I'm still running up the hills, and I'm passing all these old guys. And they're like, you should probably be, is this your first ultra? And I said, yeah. And they said, you should probably be walking the uphills. And I'm like, what the fuck's wrong with these people? I'm like, they're walking. This is a running race. I don't walk. I don't walk on the trail. So sure enough, though, come like mile 25, all of them are passing me. And then my legs are like locking up. I'm like feeling like lead. I'm like totally depleted. I'm only drinking water. So I'm not even doing it. At some point, my hands were so swollen. Somebody's like, you need to do some salt. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, okay. And they give me like some salt pills. But it was a very big learning curve. So that was my first 50K.
Wow.
And then all within another 3 months, I ended up running a couple 50 milers, quad gypsy, and then 100 miler.
Looks like your first race was in 1998.
Yes.
Wow.
That's the Skyline.
Everyone remembers their first salt pill, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I became friends with salt after
You're like,
that.
What is this magic?
Yes. Oh my God. We have so much. It's come a long ways. For the nutrition wise, like what people were using back then compared to now. Yeah. The bars.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Yeah. Goo was starting at that time. Goo had been developed. So it like we did have stuff.
Wow. So for our audience here, if you go to Katra's Ultra sign up, I did not know this until today. She has 345 races. I think that is the
most I've ever seen. My friend Linda McSadden has more. And there's a couple of other people that have more. So
if anyone has any questions about a race, send her an Instagram DM.
Yeah, on Instagram for sure. Totally. I'm always willing to help newbies because there was no social media when I started. It was all like learning. After that first 50K, then I got a free magazine of Ultra Sign Up, and that's when it was black and white. So that's when I was able to look and be like, oh, there's this race here. And they always had the entry forms in the back. That's how I signed up for my 100 mile at Rocky Raccoon. It was the entry form was in there and you filled it out and you sent your check-in. So that's how things, but they would have every month, they would have a couple of races where they highlighted. So that weren't coming up. And that's how I learned about Rocky Raccoon. It was like it highlighted and talked about it and it was in Texas. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that one.
You know? So you went from road marathons, and then you went to all these mountain races, and then you completed the Badwater 135 race, which people who may not know, that is the absolute hottest race. It starts in
not the hottest race. I beg to differ. I felt like Marathon des Sables was much harder.
Oh, yeah. But it's all road, and it ends at Whitney Portal. And fun fact, I just learned this too, that you crewed and paced for many years before you actually ran it.
Yes. People always assume. So the first year when I ran it in 2018, people are like, this is your first time? And I'm like, yeah. Or when I was mentioning that I had gotten selected, people are like, you've run it a bunch. And I'm like, no, I don't run road races. And then I had crewed my boyfriend, Phil, I think three times at that point before I ran it. Yeah, I crewed him three times. And then I decided, and that's where I met him, crewing him. And then I decided, okay, it's going to be my turn. I'm going to do this. And I had the year before we had run across the United States with as a team. And I was like, oh, you know what? Yeah. And I'm like, I'm going to do this. So.
And that's all road, right? When you run across the U.S., is that all road?
Yes. We weren't on any trail.
Yeah.
Unless you're on the side of the road. We almost got hit.
Where you find a little bit of dirt.
Yeah. So yeah, after that, yeah, I was like, shoot, I can do this.
So you go many years and then they come out with the 200s. So how did you learn about the 200s? Because I believe the first one was 10 years ago, Tahoe 200. Yep.
So Phil, my boyfriend at the time, when I think the first time he did it, we weren't dating, but he had already run 200 milers. So he did Candace's first one. Plus he did like across the years, 48 or 72 hour, he did 200 miles there like multiple times. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to run a solo 200 first. So I did a solo at the time though, too. Back in 2004, I ran on the John Muir Trail, and in 5 days, 15 hours, I did one direction. So 224 miles in 5 days, like 5.5 days, 15 hours. So I was already doing, and that's carrying stuff. So I was already doing that type of thing. And I ran 175 miles around like Tahoe, I mean, on the Tahoe Rim Trail with my two friends. And we did that in 72 hours back in the day. So it's like, I was already doing stuff early on, and this is all like 2001.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was doing stuff like that before, but never anything official. And then when Phil was doing the 200s, I was like, I'm going to do one in Sonol. I'm going to park my car and I'm going to go back and forth over Mission Peak and loop around and have friends come out. So I did that. And then I always wanted to run from Yosemite from Fremont to Yosemite. So I decided, I'm going to run from Fremont to Yosemite. And we made it into 210 miles. So I did that. And I forgot how many hours it took me to do that. I think 90 something or 105 or something. I don't remember. So I was doing challenges like that and having a crew and picking and doing stuff. So finally, I think it was 2017. Was that the first time, or 2016 I ran a 200? I don't remember.
I think, and Tahoe was your first one?
Tahoe 200 was my first one. Yeah. But at that point, I even ran the Muir Ramble route, which was 300 and some odd miles from San Francisco to Yosemite. And part of it was on trail. It was this couple wrote a book and I bought it years ago in REI. And I was like, one day I'm going to run this. And I was moving. So it must have been 2017 because I was moving from Fremont to Bishop. And I thought, this is the time to do it. And then I can get from Yosemite to Bishop. So we were still living in our house, but we were moving out at the same time. So he crewed, and I have my friend Dave crew and my friend Jay crewed. So they crewed and paced me, but I started in San Francisco, the same route John Muir took, and he walked it. And this couple wrote this book that kind of tried to follow exactly. There's freeways and highways now. So you went on and off trail. So you were on a lot of trail. A lot of this is on trail and along canals and things. We looked at the book and we've got the maps, and the way you had to start is I had to take the ferry from San Francisco to Oakland, because that's what John Muir did, because there was you couldn't go on the bridge. Like a boat.
Oh,
he took the boat. So he arrived in San Francisco on a boat, and then he took the boat from San Francisco to Oakland. Okay. So in Oakland is where you start, but that's how the people wrote the book. So I started it like he did, and then I got off in Oakland, and then I ran along the Bay Trail. So the first day I made it all the way home to Fremont, where I could sleep in my house. So it was like 50 some odd miles. And then the next day followed it, ended up in, I don't know where, somewhere where I could drive back home one more time to sleep. And then the rest of it, we just took off, and it was like under 7 days, I think. I don't remember. But yeah, so the last part, though, this is a funny story. So they crewed me and paced me and all of that. So Phil had to leave on the day before we're going to finish, because we're going to finish on like the day after 4th of July. So the 5th of July, I think we finished. And he had to go to work. So he left me, Dave, and Jay, and they carried everything in their backpack because I was being crude. And so we had to sleep on the ground that night. We had no tent, no sleeping bags. We just all spooned on the ground. And so we get to this one point that I already had done 2 years before. And it was like this like old abandoned road in Yosemite that you pop out on. Cause all this is like a lot of old roads that are abandoned that we were on. So I already had did this one section. The last 2 years, there was like a ton of storms and down trees and flooding and this, that, and the other. So we get into this thing that's fully overgrown with weeds and bushes as high as me. And I'm like, oh my God, where do we go? I go, there was a road here and now it's gone. So luckily the guys were really good at navigating. So we
I was gonna say there wasn't through. No Jeep Gaia back then.
We did. This was only in 2016, 2017. We had Gaia. We had Gaia because I must have already run a 200 because I had Gaia on my phone. So we navigated, got through there. And then so once we get through all that, and I already had already done this like 20-mile section into Yosemite, all of it got washed out. So there's this old abandoned trail that used to be the very first road into Yosemite. So the last 5 miles, all of a sudden we get stopped by this sheer drop-off. No trail. It's completely gone now. And I'm like, this wasn't here. And so I'm like crying. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is going to be the end of this right here. This is not a finish. So Jay and I'm like sleep deprived. And Dave goes up and over. And I'm like, don't go up there. You're going to fall. There's a landslide. You're going to, you know, die. So he finds a way across. I don't know how. And we ended up like Jay was afraid to go across. I was too. I was like terrified. And we somehow got across. And then the trail, like that one piece that was missing, we were able to get around. So then we finished.
Wow.
And so there's like a sign-in log where we finished at the little visitor center. It's, oh God, I forget the name of it. But it was closed. So we get there and there's like a logbook for people that have done this thing. And not very many people have done this. Nobody I know has run it. There was another lady hiking it from Oakland. She was with her wife and she saw the car. Her wife saw the car and said, oh my God, there's somebody else out here doing the trail. And she saw her car that said Muir Ramble Route. And then she's, I'm walking the whole thing. So it was fun to meet her. But so yeah, I finished at the little visitor center thing where you sign in and never got to sign in.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I'm going to go to Yosemite and sign the book and just put the like date I finished so I could like somebody can look at it and say, oh, look, somebody did it.
Yeah. So when you ran Tahoe 200 in a race, how was that? Because you had aid stations, you had crew, you didn't have to carry as much stuff.
I don't even, did I have a crew the first year? I might have. Yeah, no, I did have a crew. Mm. Yeah. Oh, so then, yeah. So I did do that before I did the Muir Ramble route then. So I was already seasoned.
Could go around the whole lake.
Yeah. So
back then.
So I did the Muir Ramble route the following year.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I was already seasoned for that. And even though it was already a 300 miler, I had done. So
with races, do you know how many 200 races you've done?
So with counting like the 6 day and all of that, I think around 18 or 20. And then I've done a lot more of solo. So I want to just quickly backtrack. So that Ohlone 50K race that the race director talked me out of, I started doing that race many years ago. And I always did it as a 100 miler. So I'd finish with the 50K. Then I started doing it as a 200 miler. And finishing with the last day at the 50K. So I talked to him, John, he's not the race director anymore. I go, it's all your fault that I started doing all that shit because you told me I couldn't do this.
Yep.
Like it was too hard. So
I did
that. I think I did 200 miles with that race like four times before I moved, three times. And the rest of the times I only did the official race once or twice. And I've finished it like 15 times and all of those have been 100 miles or more.
Wow. So you just go early before the race
starts? I don't go anymore because now that I moved, I did it one more time after I moved. And the race is actually not happening now. It fell by the wayside. And I hope somebody brings it back. But yeah, So
wow. So you've done over 2200s, and then you've also done FKTs.
Yes.
So how'd you get into that?
In 2000, it was like a back. So I knew Buzz Burrell and Peter Bachwin back in the day, like way back in the day when they were doing stuff. And I've run with Buzz before he came out, but they were doing stuff. So we were looking to break their record on the John Muir Trail, me and my friend Suzanne and Linda. So that's why we did the Tahoe Rim Trail, 175 miles. And this was before the trail was totally finished. Like, it's all marked now. It's like nice because I fast packed it multiple times and did it in 5 days and just for fun. But when we did it, we had to have maps. There was no GPS and any of that in 2001. So we were trying to break. There was three guys that did it together at the time. And so we were trying to break their record. And we did it in 72 hours. And I think they did it in 68. So, yeah. So that was, at the time, the hardest thing I ever did. And it was like, I think me and Linda had both just finished Western States. Actually, I think all three of us have just run Western States in June. So we did this at the end of June or in July, beginning of July. So we did that as training to get ready to do this FKT on the John Muir Trail. So at the time, we got like the woman record. We did it together as a team. And then we went out, and the John Muir Trail is totally different. So in your mindset, when you first get into these things, or even do like a 200 miler, you're just thinking, oh, I run 100 miles in 26 hours, like a Western States, 27 hours. Yeah, double that. Maybe just do 27 the first part and maybe 30 hours.
If only it was that easy.
But that's because I was such a newbie. And it was like, that's my thinking. And Linda was like, oh, yeah, we could do this in this time. And we got out there and started, and right away Linda had problems, and then we weren't going fast enough, and Suzanne needed to get to her stuff in Red's Meadow, and we weren't going to make it in time. So I had to stay with Linda because she was having problems. So she ended up dropping at Red's Meadow, and then me and Suzanne continued on, and we weren't going to get an FKT, but we were just going to keep going because she she was having issues. I ended up getting ahead of her, and I got up to the top of Muir Pass. And it was waiting and waiting. And it's 2 hours I'm waiting. And I'm like, where did she go? So I start running back down and I see these people coming up and they're like, are you Katra? And I said, yeah. And they said, but your friend Suzanne broke her arm and she's hiking out of Paiute Pass. She wants you to keep going. And I'm like, I never spent a night in a wilderness by myself. I'm like, no. So they're like, good. So I made it back to the ranger station. And then because the ranger had information for me and he goes, yeah, she's hiking out with an EMT guy that's hiking, and yeah, she broke her arm. So I finally caught her, and then we hiked out together. It took us 2 days, and it ended up she had malignant melanoma, and her bone got, it was like a tumor ate her bone or whatever, and she ended up passing away five months later. But me and Linda both think she knew, because she was saying stuff about, yeah, I have this thing going on, but it's okay. I'll go to my doctors when I get back. And I think she knew she had cancer, but wanted to do like something just to do it. So yeah, so we ended up hiking out. So I never did do the whole John Muir Trail. We got back out of there. And then in 2002 was the first time I did it. And it was with my ex-husband, and we did it together. And yeah, that was nuts. So I met somebody when we were doing it together, and we did it under 7 days, and he was a climber at the time, and we carried next to nothing. So we were running the trail, and he was ahead of me, and he was talking to these two guys where we were going to set up camp. We didn't even carry a tent. Thank God nothing ever happened to me out there, because I was going minimalist, knowing nothing, no spot device. Like now I carry everything. I'm like scared something's going to happen because I survived so many times being lucky. But get up to these guys in Ammon. He goes, their friend hiked it twice. And I go, what? I go, wait, he did it out and back a yo-yo? And they go, yeah, he did it in 16 days. And I was like, I'm going to do it in 12 days next year. And so Ammon looked at me and he goes, don't think I'm coming with you. And I go, that's fine. So the next year I ended up doing it, and I did the whole thing 12 days, 4 hours and 57 minutes. Wow. And One Direction, I was my fastest time from Yosemite up to Mount Whitney in 5 days, 15 hours. Had horrendous blisters. Like there was no cell phone. So when I was to meet Ammon at Tuolumne, I called him in Reds Meadow because there was a payphone to his cell phone. And I said, I'm going to be there at this time. But, you know, I was running late and it's like, you just have to wait.
Yeah. There's no way to contact.
So I didn't have trekking poles at the time, had horrendous blisters, was crying, popping my blisters, got to Tuolumne, like the grills closed. I was like wanting French fries. Like I was just like sick of eating like hummus. Like back then, I didn't even have backpacking food. So I put water and hummus and mixed some black beans and water. And like now I do cold soaking, but I was doing cold soaking back then and I didn't even know it, but it was like there wasn't anything good to eat. And I carried a jar of like peanut butter, plastic jar of peanut butter, was and some tortillas, gluten-free tortillas. So that's how I survived. But anyways, I get to Yosemite and my feet are a wreck and it's like I got food. And so his son, how old was Austin at the time? 14. And then there's this other climbing kid, 19. They ended up going with me at the end. And we found two sticks because I didn't, there was no trekking poles back then. Nobody used trekking poles. So hikers probably did. So I had to use those. And anyways, we're making our way and I'd stop like maybe every 4 hours to pop my blisters again and then retape them and go. And those guys were falling asleep because they were young. We're in the middle of the night and I haven't slept. The minute I got up from Reds Meadow, I'm going in a 36-hour push to get to the finish. So we get to this junction near Half Dome. I mean, Half Dome is a very popular hiking trail. So we're just past the turnoff, and there's early morning hikers. It's now 5 or 6, so they're the ones that start at 4 o'clock. And this lady sees us, and she goes, oh, you guys already went up and down Half Dome already? And then Austin's, no, she's doing the John Muir Trail twice. And she's, what? She goes, my husband did that hike last year and he did it in 18 days. And I go, oh, no, I'm finishing. It's going to be under 13 days, 12 days. And she's, wait a minute. You mean to tell me you're doing 424 miles in 12 days? I go, yeah. And then she goes, wait. And she goes, honey, her husband's hiking up. She goes, why did it take you so long? This lady's doing it twice. So then we get down to the, and it's funny because I'm so out of it going down and I'm like, nobody cares what I've done. We're going to get down there. And they didn't even, cell phones didn't even have cameras back then. I think I know what I had, those disposable cameras I used to carry. Because there was cameras, electronic cameras back then for your computer and all that. But I didn't have one of those. So I had something because I do have pictures. But I think it was the disposable cameras I took. And so we just stood near the thing and they took a picture of me at the finish. And we got on the bus and went back to camp 4 and I had to get Epsom salt for my feet. Nobody cared. All the climbers were excited, like all the big wall rats. They were just, my God, you're badass. Oh my God, I can't believe you did that. And I was like, I wanted to have a speed record just like him. And
so you pretty much were by yourself though for that. And you slept at night by yourself in the wilderness?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. I was laying. I didn't have a tent. I was just on the ground.
Dirt naps. Yeah. Huh?
Yep, dirt naps. I'm a professional.
Queen of dirt naps.
Yeah, I'll tell you, like, I learned a lot. It's like, I've done it a few more times with carrying minimal stuff, but now I'm like, yeah, after that, I was like, I need a tent in case something happens.
Yeah.
You know, I just was lucky back then. I didn't know. That's always my biggest fear is like thunder and lightning up in the mountains. When I see a small cloud, I'm like, no, it's going to come.
That's incredible.
And in the meantime, after that, I did the PCT in 2007. Mm-hmm. So that's when I learned, oh, yeah, you should probably have some gear with you.
So you've done a ton of FKTs, right?
I've done the Ramble Route, the yo-yo on the John Muir Trail, going from Fremont to Yosemite. I call that. So those are the only ones I have.
Wow. But they're huge ones. And way back before you even had technology.
The Tahoe when we did that. So. Yeah, we were doing stuff like long before it was like a thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. And besides Phil, your favorite running buddies are your little puppies. Let's talk about children.
Yeah. So I got Whitney and Baxter. Baxter and Whitney are both long hairs. And Baxter will be 6 next month. Whitney is 4 and Forrester is 2. So as most people know Truman, he was my little ultra running doxy, and he passed away a couple of years ago. And I knew eventually he would send me another dog, but I wasn't ready. Like Baxter and Whitney, they go up to like, they've both gone 17 miles, but they have long hair and they're good like 10, 13 if me and Phil are together. And I take them every day, like three to 4 or 5 miles, but it's just too much with all the dogs. But I still take them all out. They got to get out and exercise. So 12 days later, Forrester came to me, and it just, it's a crazy story, but to make it short, the lady that had him, I had messaged her before Truman passed away. And I'm like, she goes, oh, I have these dogs, puppies that are coming available. And I go, I'm not going to be ready until November because my dog is going to be passing away and I want to have some time. Like 12 days after he passed away, or actually 11 days, she sends me a text with these puppies. And I was like, because I had told her before, oh, I don't want a long hair. I want to have a short hair now instead of long hair. And I don't want a female. I want a male because I knew Truman was going to pass. So it was just bizarre that she happened to send me this picture of these puppies. And I was like, oh. And then I was like, Phil, and my friend Joyce was over, and Andy, and they're like, it's a sign. It's a sign. I'm like, oh, I don't know. So I message her and she goes, actually, my aunt, they're my aunt's puppies from the breeding. And I said, okay. She gave me her number, and I'm talking to this lady on the phone, and I don't know how I started talking about Ultras, because I was telling her Truman had run a 50K and I'm looking for another little dachshund, my other ones run. She goes, oh, and she goes, my daughter has run those 200s. And I go, what? I go, I've run 200s. So her daughter, she ended up messaging, and I forget her daughter's name right now, but she always works at Moab 240. She does medical too. And she goes, I'm going to ask her if she knows you. And then she messaged me. She goes, my daughter read your book and everything. She's so excited. So anyways, it was meant to be. So it was just a weird connection. So my boyfriend, Phil, who's a pilot, we flew to Corona. No, or somewhere over near there in Southern California. And she brought all the boys because I said, bring all three little boys. And Forrester was already the one I had my eye on. And then he became my guy. Aww. And now he's up to 24 miles.
And he had his first airplane ride that day.
That day, yes.
On his private airplane?
That's how I got here. Yep, on his private airplane. Oh, they all fly all over. Phil takes them all to Michigan. Yeah, they're seasoned.
Oh, and if anyone wants to see these puppies in action, go to Catra's Instagram. Yeah. They're in all her videos.
Every day I make videos of them. And yeah, Forrester's pretty amazing. So I never thought there could be another long distance like Truman, but Forrester is even way faster. Truman always stayed with me because I got him when he was 6 and a half. So he came from a hoarding house. And so it just, his personality was so mellow and gentle. And Forrester's like, he's a little badass.
Oh, I love it.
He's a little feisty guy, but he's he's pretty amazing. The minute I go out, he wants to go multiple times a day and he goes with me. It's like, I have to stop myself from making him do too many. Yeah, 120 mile a week is more than enough. But he has done, I think his highest week was 75 miles. And I was like, yeah, we got to keep it a little lower. Because he was born with luxating patella, so he will need to have surgery on his knee, but it doesn't affect him right now. So when people always comment, they're like, oh, he's hurt. And I'm like, no, he's not. He's okay. He has an orthopedic surgeon that is, you can let him run 20 miles because he knows me and he knew Truman too. And he's let him run as long as he wants. He'll let you know if he's in pain. And he doesn't. He never gets tired. This dog like goes. Like he's ahead of me in every video. That's why he's ahead of me, because he's so much faster than me. But this year,
great training, buddy.
Yeah, it's taken, it took until pretty much this winter that I finally got him dialed in with listening, because he was a chaser, and so I finally got him on proper recall, because it's very dangerous. He could go missing and get killed.
Yeah, he's a little guy.
Oh, yeah. So we got the little vibrating collar, the annoying little noises. And now I don't even have to put a collar on him. I just go, Forrest, wait. And he stops and he waits for me. And then I go, break. And then he'll take off and run ahead. He doesn't even go after the birds anymore. I think it's when they're such a puppy thing that, he's really into the digging. I stop and let him dig. And he likes rocks and he carries rocks around. He's a little odd guy, but we stop and do that stuff on the trail. But when we're on a long run, he just goes and goes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dogs are so funny. I love dogs. All right. So let's talk about this year and your schedule. Wow.
I heard thinking about it already.
So we have, Let's see here. We're doing the Triple Crown of 200s, but before that, you are running the Arizona Monster, and this is the first.
Yes, and I just did 100 miles 2 weeks ago.
Oh, so which one did you just do?
I did the Grand Masters. And for anybody that doesn't know that one, if you're going to be 50 in February of next year or you're over 50, it's a great race. I always tell people for first time people that are in their 50s that never run a 100 miler, they give you 48 hours to finish the race. And even if you're doing the 100K, they give you 48 hours. So anybody that wants to run their first 100 or just even on ultra, they give you a long time for the 50K. I think like they give you 18 hours or something for a 50K.
That's good to know.
You should. It's just more people need to know about it. I've been doing it now. This was my sixth time running it. It's just a fun race to do. And it's just, there's always going to be somebody like 80 years old out there doing like the 50 mile or the, it's so inspiring. And multiple people in their 70s, late 70s, and they're doing the 100 milers. And you're just like, I feel myself doing this race until I can't run anymore. This will be my race because they give you such a generous, and it's not a lot of climbing. I think it has 7,000 feet of climbing. It's just high desert, sandy, rocky, but
okay. So you had your 100, and then we got Arizona Monster 300 in April.
Yes.
And then we have the Triple Crown, but in between the Triple Crown is the newest 200, the Mammoth 200 in September.
Yeah.
So we got Arizona April, Tahoe June, Bigfoot in August, Mammoth 200 September, Moab 240 in October, and then you're going to finish things off with the Javelina. Oh, that's a fun one. The 31K.
Yeah. So I'm doing the short one this year. Yeah. So
the overnight.
I'm giving back this year because they're always so great to me. And I've run the 100 mile or 10 times and I do the 100K. But I want to volunteer with Jubilee at the start finish and do multiple costume changes. And so that's where I'm going to be working with her.
Oh, my gosh. Maybe I should join you.
Oh, you should.
Like, and so much we're fun.
We're doing the fun run at night.
Yeah.
So I have all these costumes and I'm like, I want to be able to like do multiple costumes without having to. Every year, me and Joyce always theme our thing together, but now we're going to theme it and do all kinds of different costumes. And I have those blow up things I can run around in at the start finish.
And that's and the best race for the costumes.
I just want to volunteer and do the fun run at night and do some whacked out costume for the night thing.
What a way to finish the season.
Oh, and then I think I'm going to do the 6 day at the end of the year. So
across the years.
Yeah. So I'll do the 6 day again. I just didn't do it this year and I forgot why. I had something where I was like, I just want to have a break because it's so much traveling right after Christmas.
And
I was turning 60 this year. So then I was like, oh, I should go there and do my 60-hour birthday run. And I was like, no, just do it here. And my friends came. And so it was great. So I did
it here. That is a huge schedule this year. So with all these 200s, what's your typical training week look like for you?
I always try to do 100 mile weeks. This time of year was when it's really cold out. I try to do 80. I do have a treadmill now, but I'd rather go out in the friggin' blizzard to get on there. So I got a weighted vest. So I've been like when I'm watching a movie, I'll put on the weighted vest and just walk and do that, you know, so that way I can watch TV and just put on, I don't know, some true crime YouTube on TV and just walk with the weighted vest. So that's what I've been doing a lot of. And then but the weather was really actually pretty good this year.
It was.
In Bishop. We're going to get a big storm. Like tomorrow we'll get snow. It doesn't look like it now, but and I'll go out and run in the snow. I take Forrester now. He's got the boots and the whole jacket and he loves it. he loves it in the snow.
And so do you strength training, mobility, any cross training?
I do. So I was just at the gym. So I go to the gym. And so when I got clean and sober many years ago, 30 years ago, I started out by working out in the gym. So I've always maintained that. Both my brother and my sister, my oldest brother and my only brother and my oldest sister, they are personal trainers. And my sister's a professional bodybuilder and she's 68.
Oh, wow.
So, And my brother has another job, but he's been a personal trainer for years. Yeah. He's given me workouts for years to do. So I've always, like I said, been in a gym doing weight training, lifting. I used to do CrossFit for years, but I got too injured. So I started doing CrossFit.
Yep.
In 2006, I started doing CrossFit. When there was only 21 CrossFit gyms in the United States when I started.
Now there's one on the street corner.
But I got super injured. I've never had a running injury, but I have residual injuries from CrossFit, from stuff that, like, where I tore stuff and just didn't, like, my hamstring or my glute, I tore, and I injured my shoulder really bad, dropping a weight on it, and just the scar tissue. But I do those type of workouts because it's great. You learn a lot going to those, and I do some of their WADs and workout. And I'm doing a lot more plyometrics now because I noticed just recently, I'm like, God, I'm not as bendy as I used to be. It's like you, and as you get older, you lose your muscle. So it's, I keep looking at the scale and I'm like, I'm same weight, but I have no muscle. That's, it's like, you have to work harder to build that muscle and maintain it. It's interesting because you hear that. And it's really, it seemed like 2 years ago, I got really thin doing a lot of the races and then trying to pack the muscle back on. I'm like, yeah. So this year I'm like, you really, really got to focus on eating a lot of, and I'm vegan and I'm pretty, I eat very healthy. So I, it's like, I just have to eat more, adding more like nut butters and things, nuts and stuff like that to build when I do my vegan protein powders. But yeah, working out in the gym is really important. So I try to go at least 3 times a week and I'm trying to do more plyometric stuff because I just realized I'm like, just doing jumping jacks and stuff like that is really good. Jumping squats, box jump up, step down. It's just, I didn't realize. I'm like, I'm really losing my mobility in that aspect of jumping up and down. It's like even jump roping, it's good. So trying to do more plyo stuff, adding that back in instead of just weight training. It's like plyometrics is super important, especially running. It's like you're up and down.
And the technical trails, all the rocks and everything.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I don't want to fall and get injured. It's like, I'm getting older. So like, I don't want to break something if I fall.
Yeah.
And it's like, you see that, especially in women, and it's do the vegan calciums and all of that, but it's, yeah, I don't want to get hurt and be like, no, I can't run again.
Especially with your race schedule this year, you got a lot going on. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm always,
so you mentioned how you're vegan. I wanted to talk about that a little bit for people who, because they always ask. So I'm, I like to call myself Isabellitarian. Because I'm pretty much vegetarian, but I do other stuff. Like I take real collagen, you know.
Yeah.
But people care. They're so picky. Oh, you're not a real vegetarian then. I'm like, okay, whatever. Labels.
No, you are. I have friends that call themselves vegan and they occasionally do dairy. It's like they try to eat a vegan diet, but they don't follow. I'm a vegan. Like I try, I don't wear leather. I don't buy anything that's leather. I try to make sure the shoes, that's been a hard part, like the glue with the shoes, but Hoka even puts it on there and other companies will say vegan because that's the problem. The shoes back in the early days, like you could, nobody would know. Like when I first started wearing Hokas, nobody knew that worked at Hoka if their shoes had vegan glue. They're like, what is that? And it's funny here, 12, 13, 14 years later, they put it on there. Most companies will say that it's a vegan shoe, vegan friendly shoe. And people don't think about that. Like glue is not vegan.
I wouldn't have thought about that.
Yeah. So
interesting.
Just like the jackets I wear, they're not down. They're synthetic. I think about
have that option.
So the only thing that I don't have that's not synthetic is my sleeping bag that I've been using since 2007 that I got for the PCT because at the time there was no synthetic option of an ultralight. And I just keep that one. I'm not going to. There's no reason for me to get rid of it. I've been using it since 2007.
But yeah, so I wanted to share for people who may not know or people who are against vegans, these 200s, the aid stations have so much vegan options now. It's pretty amazing.
And gluten-free because I'm gluten-free too. Yes. I can't really do gluten.
And it tastes
there
good.
There is so much good food out there.
Candace's Races, Airvapa.
Yeah, because Jamil's vegan. So they've always been on that. But definitely the Races have nutrition for everybody, which is
so
really
what's your go-tos at the aid stations? Because the 200s, for people who don't know, when you get to an aid station, it's been like 8 hours and you eat, I don't know, 1,000 calories. So what's your go-to at those?
A vegan patty, and they'll usually have the vegan cheese. So just a patty and cheese, and I'll put some like mustard and ketchup on it and just eat it like that. That's usually my go-to. Or like the lentil soups. They always have the lentil soup there, so I'll do that or some rice. And I really got into those walking tamales, the phyllo walking tamales. I discovered those in Big Bear at a race that I was speaking at last year in June, and they were there, and I was like, what the heck is this? Are these vegan? And they're like, yeah. So I discovered them now and I started using them all the time. And they have, when I do long runs, I can do the ones with the beans, but I'm scared, like in a 200 miler, if I get upset stomach. So they have the ones that just have the corn base without the beans that have a little spice to them. So they have two versions of that. So I use those two versions.
I'm gonna try that.
Yeah, they're just like easy to open. But I also bring, there's some hiking, backpacking food that there's a couple of different things. I like this mushroom risotto and I forget the brand that I use, but I'll get packets of those and they
good
have the
to
singles.
Something. Good to
yes,
something.
Yes, good to
I eat
go.
Those too. Good to go. I eat those
so
too.
So the mushroom risotto is my favorite. So I order the one, the single one. And at an aid station, I'll get some hot water, put it in there, put it in my pack and then have my little spoon with me. And throughout the race, I'll be eating it like when I get hungry.
That's
such a great
idea.
Because I can't eat one of those at an eight, unless I'm going to be there for a while. If I'm going to take a nap.
20 minutes.
Yes. But yeah. So I put those in my drop bags just in case I get to an aid station, because it's happened in the past. There was something not for me or they were out of something. Mm-hmm. But it's just good to have something backup. And those have a lot of calories, a lot of sodium. Yes, but the risotto one is my go-to.
I like the pad thai. That was my favorite.
The pad thai is good too. But that's too spicy. Like things are, I can't have spicy.
It is a little spicy. I don't think I'd use it for
like
a race.
Phil loves spicy. He'll eat those walking tamales that have the highest spice. And I'm like, oh, I can't handle it. But I never eat that mushroom risotto thing ever, except in a 200. I won't even use it backpacking because it's my 200 mile nutrition. And it's, oh God, I don't want that. If I'm doing anything else.
What you're going to have for the Monster 300.
Those are my drop bags. And there's also another company that makes these ones that have quinoa in it. And I forget the name of it, but you have an oil packet you put in there for more calories. And it's another one of those natural vegan gluten-free companies. And it's just a single serving as well. So I used those last year when I was out on the Pacific Crest Trail for a couple of weeks. And I'm going back out. Oh, in between, I'm taking my friend John. We're going May 20th. We start on the PCT and we're doing 10 days. And that'll be training for Tahoe 200. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do a fast pack for 10 days out there.
That sounds awesome. So what's your biggest piece of advice for someone who wants to run their first 100?
Their first 100? Do it.
200. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. 200. So 200, I always tell people, and I meet hikers all year long. I'm helping PCT hikers and they learn. They're like, oh, you're that girl that runs those 200s. I follow you. Or they meet me and I start talking about it. I'm like, you could do it. You guys are doing 30 mile days out here. You're strong. And they always do those challenges when they get to Oregon and they'll do like a 24 hour challenge. And a lot of them will do 80 miles hiking in 24 hours. So I'm like, you dialed it in. But I always tell everybody, it's not like when you run a 100 miler, because in your head, you're thinking, oh my God, 100 miles, and then I got to run 100 miles. That's a lot of information for you. It's more of a fast pack. So if anybody's ever gone backpacking, it's more like that. We look at the larger picture and it sounds scary. Like when I think 300 miles, oh shit, that's a long ways. But no, you just break it into, oh, I'm going to do a fast packing for 7 days. Out in the wilderness and I'm going to get food. So I don't have to carry my base weight with all my gear. It's like usually 20 pounds, which is pretty light. I don't have to carry that much. It'll be like 14 pounds with all my stuff, 13 pounds when I'm out on the trail. But I tell people they can do it. They can totally do it. It just sounds scary, but it's to me in many ways, it's easier than a 100 miler. With a 100 miler, if you're not super fast and you're back in the pack, you're like, shit, I got to be on this.
You got to move.
I can't, like, screw around. You could screw around in 200. I always just go the first 100 miles and I bank so much time and I'm not fast and I'm hiking a lot of it. And then I take my nap and that's another thing I guess I should give advice. Have a napping plan. Have a sleep plan. So my goal when I do my 200s or Moab 240, I sleep a total of 5 hours. So I do a 3 hour sleep, usually at 100 miles in, whichever's closest to 100 miles. And then I do around 150, 140, 150. I do another 2 hours. And the rest of them are dirt naps. Really, at like a 10, 15 minute dirt nap, you feel like rejuvenated. You feel like you slept longer. And it's even if I have a pacer, I tell them, wake me up in 10 minutes. And I wake up at 8 and I'm waking them up. But they're like, it's not time. And I'm like, I'm fine now. So you just have to come up with that plan, because that is crucial, because that can make and break your race. Mm-hmm. Your mind will talk you out of, oh my God, I'm hurting. Oh my God, I feel like crap. Oh, I can't do this. If you don't let that negative chatter rest when you're getting to that point and hallucinating, and a lot of people drop out before they should, because they could continue going if they only slept.
It's crazy how people are like, how can you sleep in the dirt? Oh, you can sleep. But you're
out in a second.
It's surprising. Yeah. You're just so tired.
You are. You do. And it doesn't matter. You just lay down and put your pack behind you. Yep. And it's comfortable. I've slept at Tahoe 200 in the snow at the end of the race when we had the last time I ran it, it was snow. It snowed. The last time I finished it, I guess I dropped out the last time I ran it. But yeah, it was tons of snow, and it had snowed that day. Like, we got a lot of snow, and I laid down and I slept in the snow.
I paced that year. I remember pacing that year.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Yeah, I think it was 20. When was it?
2022?
2 years ago. 3 years ago. Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember I was at Broken Arrow, and then I'm like, okay, when I'm done with Broken Arrow, I was going to drive and help my friend, I think on night 3. And so I'm at Broken Arrow and it's hailing, and I'm like, I am so glad I'm not out at Tahoe 200 pacing right now. But because the third night it was crystal clear weather, clear skies.
Yeah.
So it was beautiful.
Yeah, it was fine at the end, even when I finished, but it was snow on the ground. Yep. But my friend had to pace me in the snow, and I told her, because it was so cold, and I said, if you have to stop and pee, I'm going to keep going. I cannot stop. I was like bundled in my Gore-Tex, and she had plenty of warm clothes, but her hands were freezing. And John Parks gave her some, he always teases me. Like, he's all, is Julia going to be around? I'll bring extra hand warmers. Is she going to pace you? So he saved her, because her hands were so cold and her gloves were wet. And I'm like, I can't wait for you, even though we're like now, Candace, we have to wait for your pacer or whatever. But at that point, I was like, oh, I can't stop. We got to just keep motoring through. Like, I'll pee my pants, I'm not stopping. And then we got down because it was raining, and then it started hailing. Then it was snowing. And yeah. But yeah, my advice is, you could do it. If it's something you want to do, and I always tell people, you do it. You know what? If you're wanting to do it and you're like, oh, I'll do it in a few years. No, sign up when they open the registration for next year. That gives you a plan. You're like, it's easier than training for 100, because I use hundreds as training runs, and most people don't, but I guess I'm a little whacked out. And I do my own solo hundreds when I'm training for a 200. I go, okay, and I'll do 50. And then I go, okay, sleep for 5 hours, or like you would in your 200, you know, and do that. So practice stuff like that. Maybe set a loop up at your house and go out and test your food and things like that. Cause that's the most important thing, is being able to run and move when you're tired, and make sure you practice with food so you're not going to have stomach issues. And not too many people have stomach issues in 200s, because you learn that you sit down. You're sitting down and eating. Like, I don't usually, unless I'm taking my food to go and I'm not hungry right down, I sit down and eat my burger. It's like, you're not rushing, because you've got to get it prepared. You have the menu. And people don't understand, like, it's not like 100 where you're just grabbing some things and going.
Oh, it's
like you've got to get the nutrition, because you're going to be out, like you said, 8 hours until you get your next food. I carry just gels in between. So I calorie up there, and I always have a walking tamale with me in case, but I calorie up at the aid station. So basically I'm getting all my nutrition that's going to get me to that next 8 hours, and just using the gels and the shot blocks and things like that along the way that are fine. But I think everybody, you know, it's the newest thing. 200 is the new 100. 300 is the new 200. Just keeps going. Let's keep going. 500 miles. Let's do it.
So after this crazy year, do you have a dream FKT or solo mountain project you want to do?
I always like to do the whole Arizona Trail.
I don't think
I would want to do it as an FKT. Yeah, the 800 miles. That's going to probably be next year. Yeah.
Nice.
And maybe do it with the race, and maybe go off and volunteer and then finish off. Like,
I don't have
to do it all in one push, but be out there during that time. And I'd like, so I definitely to do that. And I want to do the whole Wonderland Trail. There's some other trails I've been looking at. I want to start getting more into Begging Peak. So there's quite a few women around here that do all this crazy stuff. So this girl, Lindsay, she's planning out these, because she's done like all the peaks around here. And I think she has a few more, but she goes, there's these two peaks I want to do. And I know you could, she goes, it's 30 miles. And I know you could do it. She goes, but I'm not, she goes, I don't know if I could. And she goes, but with you, I think I could. And she goes, we can go bag the peaks. So we're going to do that. We tentatively set it for May. So I'm going to go out on this cross country adventure with her, but I want to start doing more of that. And I've been doing a few a year with other women that are into that. And that's just, I like doing stuff like that because mm-hmm. you're just like, where the heck are we going? Where is this thing? Where, how do I get up there? And I'm learning how to look at the maps. Cause I'm like, how do you know that's where we're supposed to go? There's no mm-hmm. trail. Like, how do you know that? So I want to do stuff like that. Cause that's fun. And that's rewarding. Cause you're like, this is a suck fest. And then you get up there and you're like, hey, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah. To the top. That's how I know about
going like 3 miles straight up a mountain, climbing like where you don't know where you're going, takes a long, it takes a few hours. It's slow. But yeah, so I want to do more stuff like that. But definitely the whole Arizona trail, I would love to do that next year. So I think that's going to be my plan.
Wonderland is on my bucket list too.
Yeah, and that looks so fun. We could do it together.
Yeah, I mean, it's only 100 miles.
Yeah, totally. We could do 25 mile days.
Yeah,
and just bust it out. Okay, we're on.
Phil can fly us there.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
For sure.
All right. So last question here for mm-hmm. our listeners. So you gave your wisdom and advice for 200. What do you want to leave the listeners with? One piece of wisdom, whether it's about running or life or chasing dreams with everything you've had in life outside of running?
Make your dreams reality. If there's something you want to, don't wait. That's what I always tell people. And that's why I think when you look at my ultra sign up, all these things I've done is because I do it. I just keep doing it. I don't know if I'm going to be injured in a month from now. And if I am and I can't ever run again, I can look back and say, look at all these things I've done. Don't be sad. Like I've done a lot. And people tend to wait. And it's like the older you get, the harder things become if you don't already do it now. If you want to do a 100 miler and you're like 40 years old, you could do it. You just got to tell yourself, I can do this and sign up and train for it. It's don't let things stop you. And people tend to do that. They make excuses like, oh, work. Oh, this, that. Oh, it's like you just got to plan it out and make it happen. Because if you say, oh, that's something I want to do in 5 years, the 5 years may never come. Mm-hmm. Something may happen to you. You may not be here. We don't know when our time's up. Yep, so you got to just keep living. Yeah. So that's what I say. Just make it happen. Make it happen now. Don't wait till you can't do it. So
I agree 100%. Yep. Yeah. And even with me, with my injury right now, and I'm like, hey,
but you're still
so
getting
much.
Out there.
Yeah. I'm a swimmer now. Watch out.
Good for you. But you'll be back. It's just sometimes things like this happen to just make you look back and be like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And then you appreciate running so much more when you're like, I get
exactly.
to do this. Yep.
And nowadays, let me tell you, Phil has two hip replacements. I know multiple people that are running 200s with hip replacements, knee replacements. It's back in the day, doctors would say, you can't do that. It's going to wear out. But if you're 50 or 60 years old, it's not going to matter. You can do it now. Phil's doctor, who's in Mammoth, he's run Badwater a few times, multiple 100s. He knows. He gets people back out there. You probably shouldn't run road marathons, but you can run the 200s and 100 mile around trail. It's slow going. You're not going to damage the replacement. So yeah, there's no excuses. Like if you have to have a replacement, hip replacement or knee surgery, you can get back out there. Just make sure you find the right doctors that don't mm-hmm. discourage you, because that tends to happen in life. People will discourage you from doing things. Like I have a heart condition and my cardiologist is always, he's very conservative, but he's like, keep doing it. You're vegan. That's why you have no high cholesterol. You have none of this and that. And he just shakes his head. Like I'm going to see him on Monday and he's going to be like, he's 60 and you're doing
what you love.
Miler? No, I don't have issues. It doesn't affect me. I have what's called mitral valve prolapse, but one day it could progress, but I'm not worried about it now because you got to do what you got to do. Cause maybe I will have to have something done, but as it is right now, I was born with mine and it just has never affected me. And he's always shocked and surprised and amazed that I'm doing what I'm doing.
Nice. thank you so much for
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Everything. And we're wishing you the best of luck this year following your journey. I highly recommend everyone follow Katra's Instagram.
Oh, and I have a book too.
Oh, the book. That's right. We'll put that in the show notes, the link to the book. I've got the book. Yeah.
Good. Yep. Yeah. And they can listen to it when they're out running 200 miles.
You can. And you'll hear all about Truman. Oh,
yes.
Yep. That's how I knew all about Truman, from reading the book.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Katra.
Thank you.